So I think we should start. We have to hurry up a little bit. Though one of the keynote speakers said that deadlines are important, it seems it wasn't applied to the presentation. It's more like Douglas Adams who said, "I love deadlines, I love the whooshing sound when they pass by." Okay, I will do my best to save us some minutes. So that's what I have planned for today, and I hope we can get through all of it. And my main topic is what the general architecture of our project is about. And I will talk mainly about what the environment for our applications is built of, and also we'll talk a little bit about the infrastructure of the writer application, because that's the one I know best. So, something about me. I'm one of those guys that is, as somebody told yesterday, working for openoffice.org or StarOffice for a very long time. And I started in 1995. And nearly all the time I worked for application framework and everything that's accompanied with it. And also I worked for third-party integration. That means how other software can be integrated into openoffice.org. Since some years, I'm working as a manager for software engineering for the teams mentioned there. And that means I don't write so much code meanwhile, but still a little bit, so in my spare time. And for openoffice.org, as I'm with the team since 1995, of course, I also am working for openoffice.org since the foundation. And I'm the project lead of the framework project, and in the past I have also worked on what we call programmability, the Unix stuff, language bindings, etc. Okay. So, small introduction. First, I want you to point some interesting places. We start to populate our wiki. Some interesting categories for people that want to know something about the architecture or the general overview are the architecture and the framework categories. Framework just started, there is no content in it, but we are pretty fast fitting something into it, and even better, something useful, we hope. And in the architecture category, you can already find a lot of stuff, and of course, we hope that this will emerge in the near future. I've also put a reference to the framework project and the documentation we have provided there. I know that people have problems to find it, because the webpage on the projects is not so easy to navigate. So this is a direct link to all the documentation we have in the framework project, and there is admittedly something outdated there, but a lot of current information can be found there. So, just something that I think you should know already to watch this presentation. You should have a basic idea what openoffice.org can do. I think that's the case. Some basic knowledge about which parts make up openoffice.org, and at least you should have heard something about the basic UNO concepts, like interfaces, service, etc. Yeah, you cannot talk about architecture if you don't talk about modularity. And modularity is a touchy subject. People have very different meanings what it should be. I have a list here with three different meanings of modularity. A very simple technical definition is that you just have several parts and not one big part. That's a trivial definition, and but it's also a problematic definition if you say, "Oh, I'm as modular as possible. If I create as much parts as possible," you might also be on the wrong track. So if you try to load everything on demand, the code quality in general is not so good as it would be if you used some class libraries, If you have too many libraries, you can also have a negative impact on the overall code size, the performance, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's something that other people stress in their presentations every year. Another thing is, and this is an end user definition, make as many parts of the program removable. People say, hey, I want to install the program, I don't want to have Impress. Sorry, Thorsten. But why is this only a few megabytes less then? This is what end users think about modularity. My own personal opinion about this is a very, very questionable thing. As I will show later, we have some reasons why it is as it is in our case. And saving some megabytes by reducing functionality and putting yourself at risk not to have everything that you need to read other people's documents is always a risky thing. And what we are generally more interested in case of modularity is the removal or reducing the build dependencies and narrowing the interfaces in the code, because that's what we deal with. We know it can be quite some work if done after the fact, and that's unfortunately our situation in many parts of the code. We know that on the other hand, it improves the code quality and the stability a lot. And the opposite that we have currently in some parts of the application is a bad or unclear and unknown modularity makes the code look like a jungle. So that's maybe the reason while I thought it's necessary to talk a little bit about the structure and to fight against some rumors. I have a concrete example what parts we have in OpenOffice.org. Just a moment. This is from our wiki. I have a list where you can see what parts make up an OpenOffice.org installation. We have roughly 309 libraries with roughly 100 megabytes. If somebody is interested, you can see which libraries we have, what basically they are doing, if they are loaded in the startup, or if they can be loaded on demand or have to be linked against. This is some basic information that you can use to think about modularity, code interdependencies, and the more. I don't want to go into details here, but just some numbers. When you do a regular startup without a command line argument, just start the binary. We load 68 libraries with 28 megabytes. I think it's still a lot, too much, but it's definitely not the full installation. And there are always rumors about OpenOffice.org loads everything into memory when you start it. I think these numbers show, I mean, that this is definitely not the case. I think 28 megabytes is still a bit too much. I think we should improve here, and we are still doing this. Interesting is also if you then create a new empty writer document, you just load another 21 libs with 17 megabytes. Okay, that's still not the whole application, still not everything. And I didn't put the numbers here. If you now create a calc or an Impress document, it's not the same because they share some from the libraries that have been loaded on demand. But even if you create a document from each application, you still haven't loaded all the libraries. So there's still a lot of code waiting to be loaded on demand. On the other hand, and this is not seen from the numbers, but we know it by heart, we have a problem with some big libraries. Some libraries are very big and they are not loaded on demand and they create a lot of dependencies. And the biggest one, the biggest problem we have is our SVX library. So if you ever come across across this library, it will be fun. So this is an explanation why I took the title for this presentation. It's, I think, a very common first impression of a newbie that looks on the code and tries to do some development work. It's a song from Creedence Clearwater Revival, one of their biggest hits in the 70s. It's still one of my favorites. So. I think it's this man describes a situation where somebody looks something that he wanted to see and it scares him a lot. So what he tries to do is get through it as fast as possible. And that means either he turns back and runs away, or what if he has something to do there, he tries to do it as fast as possible and never comes back to the project. That's my impression why developers hesitate to contribute to the project. Either they say, oh, that's so scary, or they try something, maybe they get their job done, but they don't see this as this fun and don't come back. So that should say that we know the problem. And we try to do something against it, but it takes time. But on the other hand, I think we can definitely say that we have already done a lot of things and have a not so bad architecture built up, at least in some parts, and especially in the framework module. I have a small list here of the OpenOffice.org architecture. The basis of everything is our GUI class library. This is also for historical reasons. When perhaps you know that the predecessor of OpenOffice.org was its current brother, StarOffice, and we started its development in 1990-something. Before, we had only a writer application, and it was even possible to have this on, I think it was Mac OS 2 Windows. It was a native widget class library. And when we decided to add more applications than just only Writer, we thought we must have an application framework. Because we wanted to have a high code reuse. Not every application should have the same code doubled or tripled or whatever. Yeah, so application framework was the next addition. This framework is the so-called SFX library. S like star, F like framework, and X, X is just cool. It was very common to have an X at the end of acronyms. AFX are the class names for the MFC, for example. MFC is also a library that has the same idea about a framework. There's some bad gossip going around that SFX was taken because it's an acronym in the movie industry for special effects. But I believe me, it's just a good one. It's not really true. So, we have some support libraries. These are all just conventional class libraries, like VCA, like the framework. It's nothing with UNO and all the stuff. We, in 1995, we didn't have an idea what UNO could be, instead of the United Nations, of course. So we have some adapter classes, some C++ service class libraries. Service is something that is not restricted to UNO, of course. And we have GUI classes for dialogues and all this stuff. Later, when we entered the great world of UNO and service and interfaces, of course, we also created a lot of services that are used by the C++ code of the applications and the framework itself. We have UNO language binding. I think that's nothing I wanted to talk about a lot. And we have system integration. And very important, we have application libraries. And this is more or less a coarse grain view on the libraries of our architecture. Our framework was based on the maybe known template pattern. So this means we have a very tight coupling between all the modules and very rapid development of new features. The characteristics, it has control about all aspects of the program. There's nothing that in our old architecture, there was nothing that was not controlled by VCL or SFX2. The two is because the first version was just a prototype. It contained base classes for application, document, view, all you can think about. And everything was done through implementation inheritance. So this is the tightest coupling you can think of, because inheritance breaks every encapsulation. It's impossible to have loosely coupled modules if you have such a big amount of implementation inheritance. Of course, the advantage is the high code reuse. It is amazing how fast you can add new features to such a framework. When I joined StarDivision, I was very impressed about this, because in the company I was working before, we had a very strong multi-layer model where it was much harder to implement new features. And when I first saw how this is done with the framework in SFX2, I was very impressed. But this is a good side. The bad side is, as I said, tight coupling of modules and classes, large build dependencies, and it is very, very prone to what people call high-level hacking. This is an OOP term, and means that you can create very, very complicated dependencies between modules, between libraries, that nobody really can understand at the end. And we began to feel the pain of these disadvantages when our applications grew. And we decided to have new features and new objects. So consequently, our next approach was, how can we do a framework that makes use of the features Uno gives to us, like services and decoupling elements, having small and well-designed interfaces. And as a result, this is a coarse-grained architecture as it looks today. We have an application framework that not like a Spider-Man has its net over all and everything. It's more like a docking station where you can put into other modules. And the modules, I have put all of them in this, it was just a coarse-grained architecture. And on the other hand, many things that in earlier versions have been provided by simple class libraries, nowadays are also accessed by Uno interfaces, and we call them the service provider interfaces. These are services that fulfill some very popular and common tasks, and they have a very usually not so broad interface, and they are dynamically selected at runtime. Yeah. Examples are document filters, many language support services, data connector for the base application, and some newer service provider interfaces called add-ins, and our user interface based extensions we call add-ons. And so Uno has its role everywhere. And this puzzle piece on the left should show that if you go write an application that works with OpenOffice.org from the outside, you have access not only to the framework, but also, of course, to the API of the applications. So a closer look onto the framework. I took this picture from the architecture wiki. It looks a bit different because I made some additions, but in case you go there, you might find it there. What is the framework doing? The framework first comes into play if you try to load a document or to create one. We have every code that maintains and manages documents in the framework. And for loading documents, we have a filter management component that has access to the configuration and can instantiate every filter you need. It can detect the type of a document by some additional helper services. There's no code in the framework that really loads something or detects a type by itself. It just has some interfaces that allow you to plug in components that do the service for the framework. And what the framework really has, based on its own code, is document management, window management, something like a desktop service where you can iterate through all the windows and stuff like that. And on the right side, you see some very specialized tasks the framework can do. The framework has implementations for what we call the generic user interface components, menu bars, toolbars, status bar, and in the future, we hope also dock windows, etc. And the idea behind this is that this code is completely decoupled from any application, and it is also reusable, exchangeable, and it can be used also by external components that are not part of the old framework. We have a service for embedding content. In our old framework, also embedding was part of the C++ class in the class libraries, deep inheritance hierarchies, and meanwhile, it's just a Uno service. It can be exchanged, it can be extended. We have two implementations for embedding our own documents into our documents, and we can embed COM objects. It's also possible, for example, to write a component that embeds K parts if you want, or I don't know what other component models are lying around. It's a really simple user Uno interface, at least if you are fine with outplace activation. Inplace activation, of course, needs some more communication. We have a service for autosave and auto recovery. I know that OpenOffice.org is the most stable application in the world, but I think you always have been very surprised, and maybe I hope glad to see that there is an auto recovery and an autosave service working in the background that saves you from losing your documents when a crash happens, of course. Now. And storage management is also a centralized component that you can access our zip-based storages, but also storages for the binary Microsoft documents. Oh, this is definitely something. Okay. Sometimes I fight with the effects or the animations. So this is just a list of some modules so that you can see that though I count this as part of the framework, it's not implemented in the framework module. We have a lot of other libraries, most of them being UNO services that contain some general purpose services that are part of the desktop or framework environment for our applications. The named embedding services, storage package management. The configuration is an own service, but you can see it as the environment for our applications and it's a service they can use. Filter management. We have a component for templates, manages templates, and we have also a provider for global functionality that also is available to other modules. Okay. Now this is just a picture of what I have already told. Okay, what is not part of the framework is everything that starts the application. This is an extra module. We have a so-called desktop module. It's historical because in Surface 5 we had a real own desktop, famous or notorious, I don't know. And when we removed it, we still had a lot of code still there. And the module was just named desktop and we did change that. And so we have a module desktop and this is the startup. Everything that is done in the startup is happening in the desktop module. This is documented in the wiki, everything. I have just some abstracts from it to see what happens in the startup. The most important thing, we bootstrap our service manager. So everybody who's written a UNO application knows what this is. We instantiate and create some general services like configuration, the UCB that lets us access files on the file system, the web, or whatever. And we have our desktop service that maintains the Windows. We have a global event broadcast as part of the document management. Yeah, we have some system integration or command line handling so that the application reacts on external influences. The command line handling, parsing, etc. is in the desktop module. And you can see the exact description in the wiki. And we hope to keep it updated if something changes in the application. That's the nice thing with wikis, it goes fast and there's no excuse not to keep the documentation up to date. So if everything is running, we have the desktop, the UCB, the configuration, etc. There must be something that you can use to create a document, to load a document, etc. So there's something behind the menus. And this is definitely then the framework that takes over the control. And our idea is we want to have a framework that is as flexible as possible. It shouldn't have any idea about the environment you have, be it a browser window, be it a Java Beam window, an ActiveX control, just a regular window on your desktop or whatever. So we try to separate the concerns. We have Windows, we have some control code, and we have components. Components means applications. So the idea was, we have a frame object that owns the component, controls the task window without knowing what exactly this window is. It just has an interface to it. And this the anchor object where everything that controls is controlled by menus and toolbars is. So we call this the dispatching. The component, on the other hand, usually is seen from the outset as an object implementing a service we call the controller. It's a slightly modified MVC paradigm. And such a component has a component window, and this is a child window of the external window, and the component participates in dispatching. So by plugging component and frame together, the component is accessible to the menus. And let me rephrase, because I think it's one of the important things. The frame has an interface to the window, but it is definitely not known to the frame what kind of window it has. It can be any system window, wherever it is. Yeah. So, as I said, our framework is also the starting point if you want to create or load a document. So everything you can see here is handled by framework code. Type and filter detection, handing over the frame to a service that we call frame loader, and the frame loader is able to create documents, search for a filter, put them together, and everything works with UNO services based on configuration and registration, and there's no knowledge about the concrete documents or filters in the framework. But on the other hand, an application developer does not need to know anything about how a document is loaded and created. He just provides a filter, a type detector, and his model, and that's it. And this is a very flexible architecture. A document, as I said, the component does not just control the model parts, it also has the controller service. And the controller is not only the controlling the document and everything you can do with it, it's also the interface to the menu and other GUI elements. And there is a close relationship between frame and controller and model, and those three together are the components that take part in what we call the command dispatching. This is also a very, very important part in the framework, because it explains how we think extensions should interact with our application. And it also is the bridge to the old code based on the SFX2 framework. So if anybody will ever be hacking on code in Writer or Calc in the C++ document, you will come across this dispatching. The idea is that every command, every functionality you put into a menu or a toolbar is described by a command. We use a URL-like syntax to describe commands, consisting of a protocol part, a colon, and a command name. And for our internal commands, we just use a command that many, many years ago somebody thought was a good idea, has a protocol named .uno. At least it fulfills the requirement to be something that nobody else really would use. And so, and it's short, it's also important. But of course it's a little bit strange, whatever. And so such a command is just a string. And if you put something in the menu and somebody says, oh, I want to click on this, then something must happen. And the something that happens is that the frame is the contact point to the GUI, and the frame starts to find somebody who knows about something about this command. We have different ways how commands can be handled. The regular way is, if we have a standalone, if we have a default installation, is that somewhere in our code there's some object able to handle the command. And so usually the command goes to the right, where we have two so-called dispatch providers, one in the framework that is able to handle global commands or frame-related commands like closing the frame or accessing the wizards, it's a global command, or closing the application, something like that. And of course we have the document dispatch provider offered by the controller that offers the application-specific functionality. This is all managed by the frame. So this is the default behavior, and that's nice, but the fun begins if you see the other two, the other arrays. So how can I influence what happens if a user clicks on a menu button, a menu or a toolbar button? First is you can install an object that just tells the frame, before you do anything with a command, ask me. That's what we call a dispatch interceptor. This is a UNO service with a very easy interface, and it can be installed, for example, by an event, so that you have such a dispatch interceptor for every frame, every document that's created. And the frame will pass every command to this dispatch interceptor so that it can disable the command, handle it by itself, or pass it back to the frame. Many people also want to have their own functionality inside the menus. And this is what we have done with our so-called protocol handlers. The idea is that instead of using .uno, colon, anything, you can create your own commands with your own protocol part. Because the protocol part should be something unique for your application that you want to add, like an extension. And the recommendation is to use the usual notation we use for configuration, also the reverse domain notation, or OpenOffice, or if you have a company, in our example, vendor.sun.star. So to avoid name clashes. in this case. And these commands usually cannot be handled by the frame, and usually these commands will just be disabled in the UI because the frame is not able to find any code that feels responsible for it. So the idea is that you can install another user object that handles these commands, and this is part of our extension framework, and we hope that in future our IDE integration will allow you to create such protocol handlers or extension with some clicks where you just have to specify which commands you want to have and which label you want to show. And the rest is automatically bound to your code. At the moment, it's a lot of handwork still. But once you have understood it, it's easy. We have some examples in the SDK and developer's guide that show you how to implement dispatch intercepts and protocol handlers. But of course, as experience shows, many people also show up on the mailing list, AP dev and API dev. So, and usually, such questions get answered very quickly. Oh. What's that? Okay, I think I'm really done with it. So this is the dispatching, and if you want to extend or exchange functionality in OpenOffice.org, one of these blue buttons is the way to go. You can, of course, also hack in the C++ core code. When I planned this presentation, I thought about telling something about this, and I even wanted to do so, but as we have to save some minutes, I will leave it out. This is documented also, I hope, in a sufficient way on, in the framework page. I think I have the I forgot to put on the URL, sorry. We have a documentation how the old C++ framework-based code fits into the picture by implementing the document dispatch provider with the old interfaces. And this is very heavily documented for interested people. And if somebody wants to know more about it, please just don't hesitate to contact me after the presentation on the next days. Yeah. So this is the framework. And now I want to talk something about how our applications fit into the picture. This is a more fine-grained view on the overall architecture. It shows a lot of applications on the top and some other parts that not really are applications but have a similar functionality like the bibliography component or our wizards. And yeah, below this we have the framework only as a small part of several other parts. We have functionality for I18n. And what is interesting is now we have utilities, basic, common GUI, drawing layer. These are C++ class libraries, and that's where, the problems start. These parts of the program are not easily exchangeable. They are not as separated as well as the framework parts. They use C++ classes with broad interfaces with partially with implementation inheritance. That's C++ style programming 10 years old. And it's a lot of code, so it's still there because it's not so easy to change it. Or you need a lot of resources, of course. That's possible. And below this, we have, as we already mentioned, VCL, UCP, Configuration Manager, you know, a platform layer. So what I want to concentrate on now is we have the drawing layer, the utilities, and the common GUI part. And all these are, let's call it, some slaves that the applications like the writer are using. And what is the next one? So basically, all of our applications have this composition. We have, in an ideal model, a model, a view and controller. We have GUI parts like, we have the GUI parts like dialogues and some specialized controls for toolbars. And we have the document filters. I have no exact information, but we still have some filters that are not using our API and instead are using old C++ code, but they are diminishing. So I think next year or so, I hope that nearly all filters, except the old binary Microsoft filters, will be unit components. And you can see that while configuration framework and VCL are helper libraries or services for the applications, on the other hand, GUI, any XML-based toolkits, and UNO API are clients of the application code. And yeah, this is an example for the architecture of one of our applications. It's the writer application, because that's the one I know best. It's the one I'm working on. I also borrowed this slide from the architecture, or from one of our architects, from Kai Rammel. It shows that we have a model that deals with things like paragraphs, text portions, not text portions. We have, in the model, we have a different name for it. We have more or less a text array with indexed attribute sets. And on top of it is UNO. UNO means we have an API. Unfortunately, and this is also one of our problems in our applications, this UNO API is a very idealized view on the application. The UNO API of a text document says you have paragraphs, and inside the paragraph you have portions, text portions. A text portion is something with the same attribution. So if you have, let's say, a paragraph with one word in it that is bold, you have three portions. The first portion is not bold, the word that's bold, and the last portion that is not bold. And of course, if you have more than just one single attribute, you have more portions. That's the API view, and that's also the view of the file format. But unfortunately, it's not the view of the core in the C++ implementation. And this is one of the reasons why, let's say, the performance of our filters is not the best possible. Because there always has to be some transformation between the file format, the API, and the core representation. So one of the works we are currently doing is bringing this in line. So we create new APIs that match the file format and change the core implementation to have really a one-to-one relationship. So that if you wrote a document, you just pump the content into the document without permanently converting it. You might ask, why did they do this? Are these guys mad? The reason is, when we created the file format, it was not, as a famous competitor always alleged, just a copy of what we have in our documents. It's not just our core that we dump into XML instead of binary. It was a file format that was very well thought, and it tried to adhere to standards as far as possible, and to give a more abstract and reusable view for not only for our application, but also as a general purpose file format. Also, our API was not mentioned as an exact picture of the core. It was something that should be, give an abstract view of a text document. Of course, now we are back in time to adjust the core to this, so to get the best performance. But we have made some, we have done something. As an example, currently we have a version running there that speeds up writing of text documents for big ones about 40 to 50%, just by doing what I said: make core, API, and the file format in line. So this is the core, this is the API, and of course we have the view. The view contains also layout information, and the view adds another level of complexity, because, for example, to describe a table in the core is pretty easy. You just have to name where you have your cells and some attributes. If you wanted to display a cell, table, this can be quite different. For example, if you have a browser or a text document, they usually display tables in a different way. So they also they always add something onto the core. And layout is one also in Writer is one of the hairiest parts. It's code that is very prone to problems you don't even know that you have them. It's not bad code, but if you change something in the layout, it's possible that documents from customers look different in the next version. Though you fix a bug, customers are just used to how the document looks and they complain. Though you just did the right thing. So this is the layout part. I think this is a little bit different in the other applications. We also have the filters for the document. Here are just some examples. And GUI elements, I don't want to stress that, except that I just wanted to mention that in the time frame of OpenOffice 2.0, we managed to make at least all GUI parts of the applications to be loaded on demand. In case of Writer, this is roughly a megabyte of code that is not loaded when you create a document. And then on the lower side we have the mentioned drawing layer, and the drawing layer is one of the dark areas. I just have to confess that the drawing layer is a very huge library that does not have a model view separation, and it is bundled with many other functionality in our famous SVX library. So this is the real jungle. I think Writer might also look like a jungle because it's so much code, but for example, if you only work on the core of the Writer document, I'm pretty sure you can get into the code much faster than in the SVX code, because this code isn't not shielded against the other code in the Writer, but it is, at least if you don't look into the view in the layout part, the core is a little bit more separated than the drawing layer or the Microsoft filter code that is part is acquainted with the drawing layer. So if you say, where's the jungle? I would say, yeah, this is a very big part of the jungle, and this also belongs to it. So what we are planning to do, of course, if resources allow, to take a bulldozer and create some paths through the jungle, and because we don't expect that we can make some small woods from there and have bright alleys and roads between the tunnel. And meanwhile, we have to live with it, and we can. And I know that the problem is that people that want to participate in development have their biggest problem in these parts, in the application, in the application view and layout code, and in everything that lies in these areas. I hope I have shown that at least the framework and all the UNO-based stuff makes at least some sense. And so if you want to create your own components, you usually shouldn't see any jungle, in my opinion. If you want to create an extension that adds functionality to an application, you also won't see the jungle, because you can use the Dispatch API and you could use the Application API to create your extensions. And when you want to work on filters, or you want to help work on the core document, I think it's also something that is doable in a few weeks learning curve. If you want to work in the code that lies between a menu entry and what happens in the document, then you should get some more time. But you can rest assured that on our side, we are very interested to have people working with us, and so we will definitely spend a lot of our time helping you if anybody's interested, working on application code, creating new functionality, maybe fixing bugs. I love fixing bugs, I confess. Maybe others do also. But fixing bugs is, by the way, one of the best ways to learn something about the code. And I don't recommend to if you want to start development, for example, in MITRE, I don't recommend to do it on your own. Get in touch with us, ask for documentation. Maybe something is already there. Something has to be written. Maybe you can also exchange mails with us or talk with us on IRC. So we will help you if you want to get into the jungle. And interestingly, it seems that in the last year the interest has grown up. I cannot remember that in any of the last years I had so much questions about participating in writer development. So if anybody here is thinking, should I do that, you will not be alone. That's what I can say. I hope I have saved enough minutes, because at the end I wanted to leave some room for questions and answers. And I think now it's time for lunch break, right? Okay, so so I will finish for now, and in case you have some questions, don't hesitate to ask. Was this a question?
Oh, where is the printing system?
Sorry?
Printing system.
The printing system. Printing system is part of the VCL, more or less. Yeah.
And PDF export.
PDF export is a filter first, and so it is integrated as a filter, but also a lot of code is in the VCL library, but there is some supportive code in the applications, and so if you are interested in PDF export, you should get in touch with the GSL team. They can help you.
And another one. What is bean filters?
Bean filters. Oh. Yeah, bin filter. You might know that StarOffice had a binary file format, and the binary file format really was a dump of the core, because that's the fastest way to have a file format written to disk. You just put out what you have in the core. Of course, this is something that stands in the way if you want to change your core. And so we decided not to maintain this old code any longer, and then we copied the code of the applications and put some XML magic around it and stripped down everything we didn't need just for loading and writing to this format. And then this code was put aside and just is there for loading the binary format. So this filter loads the binary format and uses a ZAX interface to, with a handshake, ZAX input, ZAX output, to pump it into the real model. So we have a duplication of code, but we have stripped down it to the hopefully minimum, and though it is a little bit more code than you had if you want to rewrite a filter from scratch, we don't care because it's code we don't want to maintain anymore. It's as it is.
1 million ones.
Sorry?
1 million ones.
Yeah, I think this is a long story. We should cut short.
Regarding current architecture, so how do you apply different layouts for different languages? If we want to add the support for like Chinese language for the specific format of the layout, so how can we implement the current code easily do that?
So the layout, as an example, uses the IE18M framework, for example, for break iteration and stuff like that. So everything that fits into the IE18M APIs and services can be done. If you have anything that is not provided by this framework, it's currently not possible without putting your hands on the C++ layout code. And this needs some help from the developers working on the layout. It's not possible just using APIs. And if you wanted to do this, I would say the best way is to think about the requirement, what you want to achieve, and then think about APIs and how we can plug it into the current code and make an implementation that fulfills the API for the current code and give you some means to change the layout. I hesitate to implement anything into the C++ implementation of the layout, because over time it becomes unmaintainable if the author of this code is not available. But this is something we can do, and if there is interest and somebody says, I want to write this implementation for what I want to do by myself, then we could think about a solution that we try to factor out in the relevant parts and create an API for it. Mm-hmm.
You shown a very beginning list one-to-one between libraries and what they were doing.
Yes.
Is there a similar thing for modules? Bunch of modules and some appeared recently, based BMP,
yeah.
for example, and one would like to know what they do.
Yeah, this documentation will be extended. This was just the first shot. When I prepared my presentation, I thought this is something we should show as an example for what we want to do to make finding into the code easier.
It does not exist of what the modules do.
Yeah, we need. I think we don't need not only modules but also more functionality description. So when you say I want to access drawing objects,
the list for environment variables and people jumping.
Yeah, this is okay. This is also something useful. That's not. I think we have the list of environment variables somewhere else. But here, do you know?
Somewhere.
On the framework website or where? I know we have a list of environment variables.
List, then they should merge.
Whatever. I think the documentation about the libraries should be extended also to cover module information, and also the other way around. If you say, where's the code for drawing objects, where's the code for the word filter, this is also something that we need and that we will provide. Because for us, it's in the brains.
Yes.
But
as
of course,
a beginner, what I do is
so we must have to do a brain dump.
As a beginner, what I do is huge grabs. And
yeah.
It takes hours to find where things are and how I can interfere with them.
Mm.
So such lists would really help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good to know. So this is something we can provide pretty fast, because it's nothing we have to do great investigations for. We just have to do some diligence work.
Until that happens, you could use an XR, do you know?
Sorry, I didn't get it.
Until that happens, you could use LXR, which is,
yes,
you know that. Happens.
Yeah, that's good point, yeah. So I don't know who was first.
Project.
I think you
have
I think, well, it's very important to hear about you, to the user interface and implement your own menu items,
mm-hmm.
and connect them with extension provided commands. It's the only way, I think, to provide content to the document is embedding old documents or using that DDE fields that exist. And I'm interested in if there are any plans provide some kind of fields, that is some kind of fields that can be converted into the document, which retrieve their contents from extension.
Yeah,
which would be very helpful if you want to provide your.
That's an interesting point. Text fields is, I would say, one of our weakest fields from a competitive standpoint. So our text fields are very limited in what they can present to the user. And text fields in Writer usually are single text portions. That's a text with only one attribution. You cannot have text that is bold and underlined, and it must always have one attribution, and it is treated like a single block of text. So this limits everything you can put into there. This is, once this has been have been overcome, adding something like you said wouldn't be very complicated, because as an example, we have database fields. Database fields are pretty much something that has a d- description in strings, and there is some human service evaluating this and giving something back, and you put it into a field. Unfortunately, only something that is very limited in the content. If you take a famous competitor, text fields can be nearly everything. A text field can be a very complicated expression that can be evaluated by some other code and just return maybe a half of a text document with OLE objects, graphics, etc., etc. This is something that we can't do, and we know this is something we have to change because it's an interoperability problem. I hate this word. Interoperability problem. And yeah, so even now you can have documents that don't convert pretty well to OpenOffice at all. And once this is done, I think we should also think about APIs, make it possible to fill text fields with arbitrary content. And that's, I think, what you named here. And we would take a very simple API, of course, and not so something complicated like DDE or so. You could take an implementation of this API and map it to DDE, but that would be a special case. But by the way, we have a DDE field.
But
what I mean is, that's the way we do it. We create an API and say, what does the client, in this case, the field need to get? This is the API, and how you get it is different ways of implementation. The source is exchangeable. That's the idea behind all this stuff.
But what about a client looking for something that works similar like the DDE field, but not the DDE, but you know?
Yeah, something else, yeah. Understood. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit louder, please?
You mentioned earlier about people who might want to get, if people want to get involved in our stuff, this is just to say that my organization is very interested in multilingual layout on paragraphs, page. We already have a solution for individual scripts.
Mm-hmm.
So if an API starts appearing for like what we do, make sure it's able to support it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, in general, if you want to nail something down, you can just have some more talk somewhere else. And
yes, it would be interesting to
yeah. And maybe just another thing I could mention is Google Summer of Code was an item in Zahida's presentation. We had a project where we are working on an API for a grammar checker. That is also something that is missed usually. And we are on a good track. So the idea is to have an API that allows to check not only grammar but everything for an arbitrary bunch of text. And this could be used for grammar checking, for spell checking of complex languages that don't do it word-wise as our current spell checker does, and whatever you want to make with text. And this is also an example how we usually implement features like this. We don't try to be too concrete, just to be as abstract as possible and getting the job done, but being as flexible as possible to allow other similar things to be plugged in. And I can't say a concrete date. I think the Google Summer project is now finished, and we had a first prototype for what was a Brazilian, Portuguese. Whatever. Know what I mean? A grammar checker, and once we have the API finished, we will show it to the public, and we try to finish the API as soon as possible. So, yeah.
Do you plan to federate your user interface on XML and files like Zoom from Mozilla?
That's another touchy
model,
subject.
Is your common dispatcher, and your MVC model,
we had done some
possible if you don't have the legacy code?
Yeah, we have done some investigations, not in my team or in the framework team. It was done by the GSL team.
It seems to me the next step of your evolution.
Yeah, as I said, it's a very touchy subject. It is a great idea, the problem starts when you have the choice either throwing away everything you already have or live with having two toolkits in one application. And that's the point where we said, not now. I know this is very, very tempting to use an approach like this, because you can build up on a community that's already trained to use that stuff, that has written extensions, whatever, for Mozilla-based applications. And it's also hopefully possible that someday somebody writes an editor for GUI, a GUI editor for Zoo. Maybe there is something or something lying around already, but I never saw any. And yeah, the most tempting thing for me is the community around this. I don't think that a descriptive thing like Zoo is per se better than a toolkit like we have. It's my personal opinion. But the community around it, and this is really, really a good thing. But currently, we don't go into this direction. But if you are interested in this, it's also the stuff the GSL team should be asked for. So now everybody is hungry and we can finish. Okay, thanks for your attention.